FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Today's show is brought to you by U.S. Gold Corp. U.S. Gold Corp. is a U.S.-focused gold exploration and development company advancing high-potential projects in Wyoming and Nevada. U.S. Gold Corp. has consolidated a district on Nevada's productive Cortex Trend and is advancing the Copper King project towards production in Wyoming. Led by a team of prolific company builders and renowned explorers, including Dave Mathewson, who is directly responsible for several major Nevada gold discoveries, U.S. Gold Corp. is well-capitalized and has an extremely tight share structure with less than 20 million shares outstanding and trades on the NASDAQ, a major exchange, under the ticker symbol USAU. To learn more, go to usgoldcorp.gold. That's usgoldcorp.gold.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and well, today is Monday, June 3rd, 2019. Yes, May is behind us. We're almost halfway through this year, which in itself is pretty amazing. You know, time flies when you're having fun, and we are definitely having that. And if you want to join in the fun, just email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Any questions, comments, they're always welcome. We're a few behind now, but we're catching up. We'll be all caught up hopefully by the end of the week, but then you'll send more, and you know how that works. So, hey, remember a few months back, Saudi Arabia, supposedly their secret police, killed a guy by the name of Khashoggi, which that name, if it doesn't ring a bell to you, it should. It's arms dealers. It's all these ne'er-do-wells from Saudi Arabia. Well, with us, we have Joseph P. Dugan. Joseph, you are a head of C-Suite Strategic Council, which is International Business Public Affairs Consultancy. And you got a long history going back in the media, along with the government, et cetera. And you worked in Saudi Arabia. So who better to get the lowdown on this from? The name of the book, which you should take a look at, is Khashoggi Dynasties and Double Standards. So was it all propaganda, or is there something more going on here? Can the United States impress its moralistic ideals on dictatorships, totalitarian regimes? Should we do it, is the question. Well, Joe, I want to welcome you to the show. So,
thank you very much, Kerry.
Yeah, so what do we do here? You know, it's obviously something,
We step back and we consider you know, all the relevant realities of Saudi Arabia and the region that it's in, and we shouldn't fixate on this one murder, however horrible it may have been. It certainly we shouldn't buy into the propaganda that Jamal Khashoggi was a martyr for human rights, freedom of the press, democracy. He didn't stand for any of those things. People wildly are obsessed with talking about Khashoggi. I actually talked with him. I met him when I lived in Saudi Arabia. I was writing speeches for the top executives of the Saudi oil company and the Aramco. Aramco sent me to a public relations conference in Dubai in the year 2012. And just by happenstance, I took a seat at a luncheon table, and next to me was Jamal Khashoggi. Mm-hmm. Most Americans never heard of Jamal Khashoggi until he was killed last October. I knew about him before I met him, because I was aware that he was an important media figure in Saudi Arabia, not only in Arabic language, but in the English language. My command of Arabic is very is very weak, but Khashoggi was very, very visible. He was an oligarchic figure. He was the nephew of one of the wealthiest people in the world, Adnan Khashoggi. So he was a member of the Saudi ruling class and establishment. He was a very clever and a very intelligent, very charming man. It was a very interesting conversation I had with him. But what the conversation confirmed what I already knew, that there's no such thing as a free press or free or independent journalism in Saudi Arabia or many of those other countries in the region. So all of his career leading up to his break with the current Saudi regime, he had been a loyal servant of the Saudi system. His functions as a newspaper writer and editor and as a TV news broadcaster were not examples of expressions of freedom of the press. So what was he doing the last year of his life when he was on the outs? Well, he was doing propaganda against the Saudi, the ruling people in Saudi, the regime of the current crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. He had gone over to another faction, and not only was it a Saudi faction, but he was working for rival government's interests, namely those of Turkey and Qatar, which are supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a radical revolutionary form of Islamic politics. So when he was killed by his own government, which ugly fact that it may be, was confirmed to have happened. Did they kill somebody who was an independent journalist and a spokesman for freedom of the press, as our liberal media has portrayed things, or did they kill somebody who was a renegade? Who had always been an agent of their regime, but now was an agent of other countries' regimes? Well, it's the latter case. One doesn't have to condone murder and assassination to just tell the truth about who was he and what was he. You know, I hope that becomes clear. That's what led me to write this short book. Was to get these important facts out and to get a proper perspective out.
Okay, so
about politics and security in that part of the world.
I gotcha. So, you know, the media portrayed this guy to be a columnist from the Washington Post, depending upon your point of view. But in fact, he was a contributor. He wasn't on the staff. Maybe he was a journalist, maybe he wasn't. But the Khashoggi name is a scandal-ridden name. It would kind of be, when you look back, Adnan Khashoggi, who is related somehow, correct?
It was his uncle. Yeah, it was his uncle. Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean that whatever offenses of corruption Adnan Khashoggi may have committed, we don't necessarily need to impugn Jamal Khashoggi with that, but he was part of that family, right? And he enjoyed their wealth and their power.
Correct. So this just became an excuse to bash Trump, this whole affair, didn't it?
Yes, it did. There's nothing. It's kind of a dog bites man story that the Democrats will attack Trump on any pretext. But what has gotten me exercised is how important Republicans who resent Trump, who sometimes ally with him and sometimes don't on particular issues or areas of policy, that they have been using this against the totally reasonable sort of foreign policy leadership that Trump is trying to conduct. And, you know, I could refer to Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Marco Rubio are leading strident campaigns to punish Saudi Arabia's government, not just its government, but its leading government official, the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, over the Khashoggi affair. And they, in doing so, one, they distort the reality of who and what Khashoggi was, and two, they try to interfere in the internal affairs of the regime of an ally in a way that just can't work. It can only antagonize this ally. I mean, now, don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating that it's good for regimes to be authoritarian. I'm not advocating that it's good for that it's good to carry out assassinations. Although I will point out that our country, under orders of our president and our good ally Israel, they assassinate people all the time in that part of the world. They use drones to do it for the most part, but sometimes they use hit teams also. So assassination, the sanitized way they just, you know, our government and Israel may describe it as so-called targeted killing, but, you know, killing is a killing. And, there's low intensity war going over in that part of the world. So I think it's better to understand Khashoggi's murder in the context of one of these targeted killings. This is the United States even assassinates U.S. citizens in the Middle East. If we have without any kind of judicial process, it's a military judgment that they've become enemy combatants. Now, if that's right for us to do, maybe it's not as evil after all for the Saudis to have assassinated one of their agents who went over to work for forces hostile to their government. If you see what I mean, I want to make that.
Yeah.
I want to get people thinking that way at least. And in any case, and even if you don't buy that argument I've just made for the sake of argument, you may find it too strange or too extreme. It should give you pause before buying this nonsense that's being purveyed to the effect that the murder of Khashoggi was an offense against the freedom of the press and an offense against democracy.
Right. Hey, well, you know, this is nothing new under the sun, and certainly political assassination goes on, has been going on for centuries. And look, to put our judgment on this guy when we don't have all the facts, the fact that he might have been considered a traitor to his people, you know, maybe we don't send people off to the we don't assassinate them anymore. Maybe we send them to jail for a few years and then let them go. But who are we to tell the Saudis that, you know, this is, maybe we should say, hey, we don't agree with what you did, but it's obviously an internal Saudi matter, and we're not going to support it in the future. But to go damage relations with them would be a huge mistake over this, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, and again, there is the because the let me get back to these internal U.S. opponents of President Trump. Senator Marco Rubio and Senator Lindsey Graham have been stridently and unremittingly demanding that Saudi Arabia be punished for Khashoggi's death, and specifically that there be heavy punitive sanctions against Saudi Arabia. And Graham, in particular, has demanded that the ruler of Saudi Arabia be overthrown. Well, I mean, that's pretty, the Prince Mohammed bin Salman. I mean, that's pretty radical. That's pretty radical stuff. This is this is an ally of ours.
That's insane.
And most is you see, when I was a really young guy, I got my start in international politics as a very young fellow who got a job on the staff of Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick, the President Reagan's great diplomat and scholar at the United Nations. Well, I learned a lot from her, and that's why I wrote this short book, because the title is a reference back to her famous essay called Dictatorships and Double Standards. So I call mine Khashoggi Dynasties and Double Standards in order to try to remind Americans and others who might read what I've written of the wisdom of Ambassador Kirkpatrick, namely that most governments in the world have been and remain authoritarian governments. If we're going to have international relations, we're either going to have international relations with most governments in the world that are authoritarian, or we're going to have to become a revolutionary force that leads to the overthrow of all of those authoritarian regimes. Well, when we try to do that, as we did in Iraq, it backfired on us.
Big time.
When we try to do it in other instances, it looks like it's going to backfire on us. Let me say Venezuela. I mean, the communist regime in Venezuela is an abomination. No doubt about it. But is our current effort at intervention going to work towards our interests and the better interests of the Venezuelan people? Or is it going to backfire? I'm afraid it looks to me, I fear that it's going to backfire.
Well, let's talk about that, because I don't think the two are really comparable, shall we say, for the simple reason that, you know, Saudi Arabia, one of the richest countries in the world, obviously, Venezuela used to be a wealthy country before the commies took over. And
there's a bit of myth to that. Venezuela used to pretend that it was a wealthy country. It had oil wealth, but it had a government that spent freely. Mm-hmm. And liked to get its people to believe they were wealthier than they were.
Yeah,
well, Venezuela, before Hugo Chavez, Venezuela was not a real democracy. It was, on paper, it was a democracy and a republic.
It was a kleptocracy.
This sloganeering about let's restore democracy, in Venezuela, well, democracy has to be about more than just elections. There has to be a culture that's sufficiently honest and willing to play by rules to have a really functioning democracy. So I've got real problems with this sloganeering again by characters like Marco Rubio that our intervention would restore democracy. What's there to restore? It was a kleptocracy before Chavez.
Yeah.
It was deeply corrupt.
Agreed.
And it was not a real democracy.
It's a seaport.
Now it's gone from being a democracy to being a communist dictatorship.
Yeah.
It's gone from being a fake democracy to being a communist dictator.
Okay, but everybody ate. They weren't eating, you know, they weren't eating zoo animals then, and people were fed. The standard of living was improving in the country. Corruption was out of control, because I remember in international trade course I once took, the port of Caracas was considered almost as corrupt as the port of Lagos, Nigeria, which is saying a lot. But the fact is that the standard of living was one of the highest in Latin America. There's a lot of poverty, a lot of illiteracy, a lot of bad stuff for sure, but it was certainly better than it is now. And you know, yeah, the people yeah. do need to be rescued.
I'll argue though that intervention, why on earth would our we've already been intervening
yeah.
in a sense since January when Mike Pence went to the border of Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he made a complete fool of himself by going there and say, okay, your time is up, Maduro. Well, Maduro called his bluff. Now, why don't we just sit back and wait for the Maduro regime to collapse? Why do we have to be so muscular and assertive, presenting our alien culture to the Latin American culture as so-called saviors when we can't save them? And let's face it, we're an alien culture to them. If we want to have good relations with Latin Americans, we need to recognize that they don't appreciate us the way we appreciate ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Which is only normal, but you know, this is kind of getting to the point where, you know, to save the people there. And, you know, I'm definitely not a favor of intervention. I think it often usually does more harm than good and bogs us down in things that we just don't need to be a part of. But these people are really living in hell and they have to throw the chains off themselves. But you've got Cuba in there, you've got Russia, to some degree you have China. So where do you draw the line here?
Well, Cuba, Russia, and China don't really have much of an asset in Venezuela, do they?
No, less and less all the time.
I mean, what you've just described, it's not much of an asset. I would just say that the you know, I was a cheerleader for invading Iraq in
2003.
And I've been trying to do penance for that ever since, because I looked on in horror to realize how wrong I had been. And how wrong the senior leadership that got me enthusiastic about following them, how wrong they had been.
Yeah.
It's not a totally doctrinaire, ideological opposition to intervention, but I'm very, very skeptical about, intervention because of what has happened. And also what I find dismaying and counterproductive about the United States approach to Venezuela these days is this moralistic posturing and these threats that don't seem to be credible, or God forbid if they are proven credible. Let's go back to Marco Rubio. He's one of the most moralistic members of the Senate, and yet when it comes to things like Venezuela, he tweeted at the beginning of this campaign against Maduro in January or earlier this year. Rubio tweeted images of the final moments of the life of Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And tried to indicate, look, this is what's in store for you, Maduro. Now, if you're a moralistic Christian anti-communist, which Rubio professes to be, why do you threaten to your communist antagonist with a fate like Gaddafi's? Gaddafi was sodomized with a bayonet,
mm-hmm.
and in his appalling poor taste, Rubio wanted to remind the world of what it was that had happened to Gaddafi in reference to Maduro.
Agreed. So, you know, and he's got a lot of Venezuelans as constituents in Florida, and being how close the elections.
Well, I think there's a lot of nonsense there, too. I don't think the Venezuelan-American vote amounts to a hill of beans. It's not Venezuelan exiles, in all likelihood, not very many of them are citizens or entitled to vote. I would consider that a very fickle constituency. Again, I'm being contrarian because I think it's absolute nonsense to think that the Venezuelan exile community is politically important in pragmatic terms. It's another part of the delusion of people who think all Hispanics are the same. Mexicans and Cubans despise each other.
Yeah, well, there's a lot.
Most of Mexicans and Argentinians despise one another. Most Latin American national groups are rivals of one another. And again, it's part of a very ignorant mentality that tries to lump them all together as some sort of unified Hispanic vote.
For sure. Anyway,
and win.
Anyway, we're kind of at the end here. So I suggest you go take a look at the book by Joseph P. Dugan, Khashoggi Dynasties and Double Standards. Hey, questions, comments, email us, Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Hey, Joseph, it's been great having you on. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.